Hi, I'm Andrea Loyan, Vermont Edition producer, and I just wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening, and enjoy!
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Burlington's mayor, Moreau Weinberger, has just a few days left in office before the city swears in a new mayor, Emma Mulvaney-Stanek. Later in the show, Mayor Weinberger will tell us about his proudest moments and disappointments from his 12 years in office. But first, we're starting today not in the city, but in the farmlands of Addison County. That's where the dairy farmer Doug Butler lived his entire life. He is the subject of a documentary called Underdog from Mosaic Films that's currently touring the state, and it'll soon be on Netflix. Vermont Public partnered with the filmmakers on this tour. The film follows Butler as he tries to keep his farm financially afloat and follow his dream of racing sled dogs in Alaska. I'm joined now by the filmmaker, Tommy Hyde. He's the director of Underdog and the founder of Nice Marmot Films, and he's based in Burlington. Tommy, welcome.
Thanks, Michaela. Huge fan of the show. Glad to be here.
Huge fan of this film. I'm really excited to talk about it with you. This film really thoughtfully considers the anxiety and the depression that many farmers like Doug experience. And that's why today we're also joined by Leanne Porter. She's with Farm First, a program that supports Vermont farmers and their families' mental health. Leanne, welcome.
Thank you so much.
And listeners, if you have attended one of the recent Underdog screenings, give us a call and tell us about how the film impacted you. Do you have questions for the filmmaker? Call us at 800-639-2211. You can also send us an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. So, Tommy, take us back. When did you first meet Doug Butler?
So I was a freshman at Middlebury College, which, oh gosh, is probably 14 years ago now. And I took a class in J-term. You're a Middlebury grad as well, so mm-hmm. You know, the one-month course in January where you try something different. And so I took adventure writing and digital storytelling, which was really great because it got you out into the community, writing something and making a little movie about a local who was doing something interesting. And my professor, Peter Lowry, who is a hero, recommended that I check out a dairy farm on the outskirts of town that he had heard had a few sled dogs. So I went out there with my buddy Tito, and Doug, without knowing who we were, waved us on. And within about 20 minutes, we were covered head to toe in cow manure. And he thought he had scared us off, but we went to the local Agway and asked for a couple of pairs of farmer jumpsuits, which we only later learned are called coveralls, and showed up the next day. And Doug, to his credit, always said that that was the moment that he knew he could trust us.
Oh, wow. So you spent a lot of time with Doug and his family. How long were you making this film?
Probably about 10 years. You know, it was curious because on day one, I had a camera. And so it just felt natural that when the class ended and Doug and I stayed friends, that when I came over to the farm, I'd just bring a camera. And I learned, you know, rather slowly how to capture a little bit of what I was seeing. And I knew Doug had this dream of going to Alaska. But what I didn't realize was that he had never left the farm for more than 5 days his entire life. And a good story, as you know, has tension. And what better tension than a dream and, you know, not being able to leave the cows. And so I just stuck around and kept filming and eventually started to bleed into the wallpaper. And so what you see now on screen is a, collection of moments where, you know, Doug really bears his soul, has all the highs and all the lows.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the wallpaper. It's one of the more striking visual elements, I think, of the film, of being inside the kitchen with Doug and his family members with the peeling wallpaper as they try to figure out what to do next, how to keep this farm afloat. We'll get to those tribulations in just a moment. But first, Leanne, tell us a bit about Farm First, what your organization does.
Sure. Farm First is a nonprofit that serves farmers throughout Vermont. in all kinds of things. You can call us for resource coordination. Our resource coordinator knows a lot about Vermont and what's available to farmers. We also have a peer network, which is farmers that are trained in active listening. So a farmer can call another farmer for support. And we have free counseling for farmers and their family members. Mm.
And when did you first see Underdog and get to know Tommy?
Tommy, to his credit, when they showed the film in California, really noticed conversations about mental health and the stress and struggles that Doug was going through. So when he was ready to show it in Vermont, he reached out to me, which made me feel so good. The movie is such a great way for us in Vermont to have a conversation with a real life story connected to it to show. I mean, the things that Doug went through are things that farmers in Vermont go through every day.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of those things that Doug went through. Starting with the farm itself. This is a farm, Tommy, that he has been in Doug's family for generations, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And tell us about the finances, how he was trying to make ends meet.
Yeah, it was a constant struggle. I don't think I saw one day where Doug was not on the phone at some point talking with someone from the bank, someone from the grain company, someone from the lighting company, trying to make it all happen. And I think one of the most poignant moments in the film for me, Doug is on the phone with a power company, a local power company, and he owes something like $4,000 on a bill. And he's only able to pay about $1,000. And his conversation begins. There's a lot of intensity in the film, but Doug, we've been calling this the curiously optimistic tale of Doug Butler because he manages to harvest so much happiness and joy out of the nooks and crannies of his life. And so he is laughing on the phone, trading fishing stories with the woman on the other end from the power company. And by the end, he's sharing a very vulnerable moment when he had to go transport cattle away from a fellow farmer who just couldn't take care of him anymore. Mm. And he's, crying on the other end of the phone.
Yeah.
And so the financial pressure has really never stopped since Doug took over the farm in the 80s. And it continues to this day with his son, who is still fighting for the family homestead. So constant.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up that phone conversation. We actually have a clip of the first part of it pulled so folks can listen. Let's take a listen to that now.
Diane, Doug Butler here. How are you today?
I am good. How are you?
Cold and nasty. Shouldn't we be in Hawaii drinking beer and fishing?
I don't mind sitting by the beach and watching the waves. I'm with you.
That's a good answer. I didn't expect that one.
Okay. Well, what can I help you with today?
I'd like to pay $1,000 today, and then next week I'll be after you again to make some more payment, and I'll be paying every week to 2 weeks. I don't know how much. It could be $500 to $2,500 to get us caught up, because I have some money coming in from different directions, but it comes in slower than I want it.
And Tommy, as you mentioned, Doug's tone shifts throughout the film when he's talking about finances throughout that conversation. Let's listen to a clip from another conversation from later in the film where he's sitting with his wife at their kitchen table, which is just covered in bills and paperwork.
So this time it was, holy Toledo. So there's almost 30, so there's over $30,000 in 1 month. Wow. Boy, if you could get these milk numbers up, Doug, you could, like you've been telling me, you could be not rolling, but you could make ends meet.
Joanne.
I mean, look at here, how much you made, Doug, there.
Joanne.
I know, but I need to see it in proof, Doug.
You saw that there, and then there's 400,000. Where the hell, if I had 400,000, where would I be right now?
Right.
I'd be sitting in the Fairbanks already, having a cold beer.
Yeah, and that's why we're doing all this, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Seed for laser grain.
At least I could cry. It makes me sick.
Leanne, I wonder what you think listening to those clips, especially that last one, that line, it makes me cry. It makes me sick. I'm sure that's something that comes up a lot in the conversations you have with farmers.
Absolutely. I think that's a very typical farmer kitchen in Vermont. I think those same conversations happen all the time. Money issues are really big for farmers. And what he talks about with the flow in and the flow out and time of year is just really true. And sometimes they don't know when their next money's coming in.
Yeah. So for folks who are listening, who, you know, that's really hitting home for, what resources are out there available? Not just financial supports, but emotional ones, mental support.
Right. Farm First's resource coordinator will help farmers with small grants and looking into whatever is available in Vermont for them. When they do call for resources, we always say, and how are you doing? And then we try to help them with, it's not just mental health we're talking about. It's just, it's stress, it's daily anxiety, it's not taking care of themselves. Farmers take care of their animals way better than they take care of themselves, we know. So support's available, and we try to connect to all the other supports available in Vermont. So it's a wide range.
Yeah. Well, taking care of their animals better than they take care of themselves. I imagine, Tommy, that hits home for you, seeing Doug take care of his cows as well as these sled dogs that he loved so much. Tell us about that aspect of Doug Butler.
Yeah, well, it takes a special breed of human to take care of 600 cattle and then, I guess, technically 50 dogs. It might have been a little bit more than that at another point. But yeah, Doug and his dogs, it was hard to tell sometimes whether Doug was adapting aspects of his dogs' personalities or if his dogs were adapting parts of Doug's personality. But it was a really special bond to witness. There's clearly so much trust there. Dog mushing is a really intriguing team sport because you have the musher and then you have up to 16 dogs behind the sled, and there are so many individual relationships and pairs and strategy that goes into the arrangement of the dogs. And I was lucky enough to be able to experience it at one point when Doug and I went to Alaska. And it's really powerful to be on the back of a sled and to watch these dogs look back at you and, you know, check in to make sure they're doing a good job. And I could see a little bit of why, you know, Doug would wake up an hour earlier than he needed to milk the cows to feed his dogs.
Tommy, before the break, we were about to talk about Alaska. Part of the film Underdog follows Doug as he takes how many? Two dozen sled dogs?
Yeah, two dozen.
To Fairbanks, Alaska. He drives them himself. Were you in the car with him the whole time?
Yep, it was me and Doug and 24 dogs and 5,000 miles of road ahead of us.
I cannot imagine what that trip was like. How long did it take?
It took us 10 days, 100 hours of driving, and it really stressed our relationship to the brink.
Tell me about that.
well, it was full on. I sat in the passenger seat and had rigged the car up with a couple cameras. I had mics hidden everywhere. And it really wasn't until about 45 minutes before we left that I was convinced that Doug was actually going to leave the farm. I was living in LA at the time. I flew out to Vermont and drove down to the farm and started to pack up. And Doug was like a week behind, and we had to leave in 48 hours.
Wow.
We managed to only leave a day late, which, as Doug said, is not too bad for us farm boys. And we drove, you know, slowly across the continent. Every 2.5 hours, we stopped to let the dogs out to stretch and take a pee break. And we got a lot of eyes from folks in the Chicago area who had never seen a dog team before. But we also got a lot of free coffee because whenever we told, you know, a gas station attendant where we were heading, they would say, "You poor things, the coffee's on me." And it was crazy because this was like truly Doug's first time off the farm. And so he saw, you know, a caribou for the first time, and he's a big hunter. And so he nearly drove off the road when he saw a caribou. He was so excited. He got to see the Rocky Mountains. We got to see the Northern Lights, and it was, you know, so special for this dream to be, you know, literally sitting shotgun for this dream of his. And then obviously getting to Alaska, such a lifetime dream of his was a really emotional moment. And so I was really, really blessed to be able to make that trip for him. And it felt very collaborative. Like it's felt like, you know, Doug's realizing his dream, but my dream has always been to be a documentary filmmaker. So I'm sort of realizing my dream as well. So yeah, it was a really beautiful experience.
Wow. I can't imagine what it would be like to travel for that long with that many dogs across the country.
Yeah, we only broke down 3 times, which also wasn't too bad.
Wow, incredible. Leanne, Tommy was just talking about this. It's kind of once-in-a-lifetime trip that Doug got to take. I imagine that the stress of leaving a farm, leaving your animals behind, is really intense for a farmer who's, you know, devotes so many hours of their day every single day to caring for their animals, caring for their business. Could you speak to that a bit and how, help us put in context how rare something like this trip to Alaska to race sled dogs would be for somebody in Doug's position?
I really don't think it happens often.
Yeah.
Farmers cannot leave their work and their animals for very long. It's a lot. So it's not something I talk to farmers about very often. They are on, just really on all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any thoughts or, I don't know, guidance for folks who might be listening who are feeling that like need for space from their work, but that it's just simply logistically impossible to get?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's part of the reason we developed the peer network is for farmers to reach out to other farmers and sort of brainstorm things like that. That's really difficult.
Yeah.
We also, not to just keep putting plugs in, but we have this wonderful opportunity right now, which is called Wellness Checks, where a wellness coach will do a sort of a survey on a farmer and find out where they're at as far as stress, anxiety, even nutrition, exercise, all of that kind of stuff in a whole package. And then give them some coaching if they need it or would like it. And then they do another survey to end out the program. And for this next month in April, since farming's coming up and it's a very busy time, actually, we're offering the farmers $200 to actually be a part of the wellness support. So it's a really great and exciting thing for farmers to be able to do right now that will help them be proactive with their mental health.
What's the response been like so far? Are people open to that? Or does the idea of a wellness check, I don't know, put up some walls?
It's all over the place.
Yeah.
When we are out talking at conferences or at these events, people are very excited about it. Just reading a blurb on Front Porch Forum or something, maybe not as much. It takes a little bit more conversation sometimes, but that's the stigma we're trying to like push through is these conversations should happen. You should be proactive. Take care of yourself mentally and physically to support your farm and keep it running as smoothly as possible.
Yeah. Was mental health something that you and Tommy talked openly about together? I'm thinking of that long drive to Alaska. I'm sure there were, you know, you had ample hours to have conversations on every topic under the sun. Is that something you two talked about, or was he a little reticent to dive in?
No, we definitely talked quite a bit about it. You know, Doug didn't really know about the concept of journalistic distance. And so as we became friends, you know, I would share more about, you know, my life and my own difficulties. And Doug, in turn, would open up. And I had the sense that some of the questions I was asking, you know, he'd maybe never been asked before, or he'd maybe never shared some of this information to anyone other than his dogs. And it, you know, goes back to, you know, the trust that we had together and the strength Doug had to, you know, really bare his soul in this film, knowing full well that, you know, much of the information would be public. And I think Doug, you know, it was peaks and valleys, strikes and gutters for him. Mm. You know, he had the highest highs. And I think the older I get, the more I believe that the folks who are capable of the highest highs are also capable of the lowest lows. And we talked about it all. And you see quite a bit of it in the film, Doug, you know, wondering, you know, is this depression? But then you also see him on the back of a dog team, you know, drinking a beer, hooting and hollering and having the greatest time imaginable. So, yeah, that was certainly a big part of our discourse over the years.
Yeah. And apologies for switching your names just there. Now, you've been having these screenings all across the state that include conversations with audiences afterwards. Tommy, tell us what those are like. What types of things do people bring up in those conversations?
Yeah, well, it's been so great to get out in the communities and watch movies as, you know, they're really intended to be seen, you know, on the big screen and in community. And it's been notable, some of the feedback we've been getting, because folks tend to get really personal really quickly, you know, whether or not they're a farmer. But, you know, particularly the farmers, those conversations have been pretty beautiful and pretty intense at the same time. Leanne was just reminding me before we hopped on the radio here about one farmer who actually recognized himself in one of the photos in the title sequence. And it turns out he grew up down the road from the Butlers and had heard about the film on the radio and came out for a screening and, you know, sure enough, was going through a lot of similar trials and tribulations that Doug was going through. And so I think I've been proud that the film has offered a moment of solidarity for folks like that, and also that they have been encouraged to share, to be vulnerable and to talk a little bit about their own experience as well. And so to that end, it's been a dream to work with Vermont Public, because documentaries, it's really hard to measure their impact. And yet Farm First is really doing all the work. If you like were to list out all the subtexts and themes in the film and then go to the Farm First website, you would see them all as like little tabs on the website. So they're doing the real work. You know, it's really where the rubber meets the road. And yeah, it's been a fantastic screening series.
Yeah. Leanne, what are some of the moments that stand out for you from these screenings and the conversations afterwards?
Really, it's more in the expressions that you see looking around the auditorium. And after we sit up on the stage and we do a question answer and you look out and you see tears and you see wide eyes and you see just that look of understanding. And we have a peer with us to answer questions, and the folks in the audience want to talk to the peer because that's a farmer and it's another farmer to talk to. But I just think it's a great movie. And I think even though Doug is a very unique individual, a farmer can see some part of themselves in Doug and his experiences every time. So, yeah, you said that about in the truck when he was saying, "Am I depressed?" and looking at you, and he was almost teary-eyed. And it was really a question. It wasn't, you know, just a statement. He was like, "Am I? Is this depression? Is this what it's like?" That was very powerful.
Yeah, and it was quite interesting. We put much of the film together during the pandemic, and it became very clear that what Doug was fighting against, isolation, loneliness, and a struggle of forces beyond his control, was also what we were reckoning with. And so I think another, you know, notable takeaway from our screenings as far away as our premiere in LA is that this is also resonating with folks who have never been to a farm in their entire lives. And I'm of the opinion that, you know, the more personal a film gets, the more universal its message becomes. And so while Doug may appear extremely different from many folks who view the film, they always find a piece of it that resonates. Mm.
If you have questions, give us a call at 800-639-2211. So some difficult news to discuss. So just last fall, Doug Butler passed away. First, what was it like for you to hear that news, Tommy?
It was very hard. I was actually on a plane en route to a screening out in San Francisco when I heard the news. And it wasn't entirely unexpected. Doug had been diagnosed with ALS a year and a half prior. And he was in a slow but steady physical decline. And he, you know, went out one night to go check on the dogs and just collapsed and didn't come back in. And so it's a huge loss, you know, personally, it's a huge loss for the Middlebury community. At his celebration of life a few months ago, there were probably 500 people in the room from all walks of life, like a really beautiful cross-section of, you know, the Vermont community, but folks were coming from all the way, you know, in Pennsylvania, in Maine, up in Quebec, to come, you know, pay their respects to Doug. And I think, you know, I had gotten it in my head at some point that, you know, Doug's this really interesting guy and I'm really on to something unique here. And then I saw myself in a room of 500 people and I was like, oh, a lot of people get it. Doug's special. And yet, you know, we're really grateful that we now have his aura, his, you know, it's become almost a proper noun, his Doug joy captured on the silver screen. And it's so nice that we're able to share that spirit with more people vis-a-vis the film.
Did he get to watch the film?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And we had the distinct joy of bringing him to Hollywood. One of the nicknames he garners in the film is Hollywood Doug Butler because he was always being followed by a camera. And so when we premiered the film theatrically in L.A. this past August, we got to bring Hollywood Doug out to Hollywood. We saw the Hollywood sign. He went dancing on the Hollywood Boulevard. He was very confused as to why there wasn't a star for him. We went surfing, and it was such a fun bookend from our Alaska trip. And I was always nervous. You know, if you're telling someone's life story, it's a big weight to bear. And yet every day we woke up and I asked Doug what he wanted to do. And he said, let's go see the movie.
That's amazing. Wow. I love that you got to go on that trip too. I'm sure he adored it. Again, one of my favorite parts of the film was seeing him in Fairbanks, just living his best life, drinking beer, sledding, cracking people up. He even won an award for how much he enjoyed himself out there, right?
Yeah, the Sportsmanship Award.
Yeah. Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about that, those connections that he made on the trip?
Yeah, Doug, when he got to Fairbanks, originally was a little bit wide-eyed. I think, you know, Fairbanks, it's like the World's Fair. It's the Super Bowl of dog mushing. It's like not a weird thing that you dog mush up in Alaska. And so on day one, he didn't really know anybody. And he was clearly quite nervous. And yet when he took off from the starting line, he really came into his own. And by day three, he was a favorite of all the announcers. And there were locals who were literally driving their snow machines out to different parts of the course with six packs of beer in the hopes that they'd be able to hand a beer to the party on a sled, Doug Butler. And so even though he got second to last, his aura pulled everybody in, as it always did. And yeah, in the most important category, the sportsman's category, he prevailed and brought the trophy home.
Amazing. Well, what is the future plan for distribution of this film? There's more screenings coming up. How can people watch it if they can't go to screenings? Tell us more.
Yeah, so we have a screening tonight in Burlington. And another screening in Connecticut next week. We're going to continue to roll out the screenings in partnership with Farm First because we believe, you know, being in person is so great. The film is also going to, you know, digital home entertainment on April 2nd. So it'll be available on Apple TV, on Amazon, and folks can catch the film there. As always, all this information is on our website, underdogfilm.org. And yeah, we're excited to share the film farther and wider.
And we'll link to this information on vermontpublic.org under today's show notes as well. Leanne, as we wrap up here, what are some of the programs, the upcoming events, the things that you hope people take away from this conversation, if they are farmers or in a farming family or community, that they can be supported by. You brought up the wellness checks. What else?
Yeah, I think the wellness checks and the peer network are two really great ways to connect with others in the farming community. But also just call Farm First for any reason at all. And we'll support you. We'll get you connected to where you need to be. 12 free counseling sessions to any farmer or a member of their family.
Wow. And it's confidential?
Totally confidential, yes.
Yeah. And so will somebody from Farm First be at each of these upcoming screenings or many of them if people have questions?
Yes, I will be there tonight. One of our peers will be there tonight, and our counselor will be there tonight.
And what's the number that people can call?
It's 802-318-5538.
I hate to out you, but you do have it written on your arm, which I love.
We were at an interview a while back, and I said it wrong. So I just wanted – I don't call my resource line very often, so I just had to make sure I had it right. But the website, farmfirst.org, has tons of information. All the connections can be made there as well.
And Tommy, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about the dogs. How are Doug's 50-plus dogs doing? Are they still on the farm? What's the status?
There was a very heroic effort by several of the folks who helped Doug's dog touring company that he was operating the last few years of his life to help place the dogs with various sled dog teams in the region. Doug was notorious for his ability to drink beer behind a sled, but he was also notorious for his stock of dogs. They're all running out their dreams on various teams throughout the region. And those who were a little bit too old to pull the sled are now living out retirement on a couch in the Addison County area.
Good for them. And the farm itself, you mentioned that the Doug's son is now running the farm.
Yeah, Doug's son, Casey, who is the man, is now running the family homestead. And they have a small beef business, like a direct-to-consumer beef business. And he runs a hay program as well. But the farm is, you know, still in Chapter 12 bankruptcy. They're trying to figure out how to hold on.
Yeah. And you're still in touch?
Yeah, still in touch. We had dinner at Fire and Ice the other week. I feel really close to Doug's sister, Joanne, and his son, Casey, brother, Timmy. I'm so blessed to be able to call each of them friends at this point. They really welcomed me in throughout this whole process. Really beautiful to be able to make a connection.
Yeah. And they saw the film for the first time in Middlebury at the screening, right?
Yep.
That was pretty amazing.
Wow. Well, Tommy Hyde, thank you so much for joining us and telling us about your film, Underdog. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And we are also joined by Leanne Porter with Farm First. Thank you as well.
Thank you so much, Michaela.